They did not speak as Leon led the way to the clearing that the Earthmen used as a landing ground. It was littered with pieces of enigmatic equipment, some of them being repacked while others were being left behind for the islanders to use as they pleased. Several of the anti-gravity scooters were parked in the shade beneath the palms. Even when not in use, they spurned contact with the ground and hovered a couple of feet above the grass. But it was not these that Leon was interested in. He walked purposefully toward the gleaming oval that dominated the clearing and spoke a few words to the engineer who was standing beside it. There was a short argument, then the other capitulated with fairly good grace. "It's not fully loaded," Leon explained as he helped Laura up the ramp, "but we're going just the same. The other shuttle will be down in half an hour anyway." Already Laura was in a world she had never known before, a world of technology in which the most brilliant engineer or scientist of Thalassa would be lost. The island possessed all the machines it needed for its life and happiness. This was something utterly beyond its ken. Laura had once seen the great computer that was the virtual ruler of her people, and with whose decisions they disagreed not once in a generation. That giant brain was huge and complex, but there was an awesome simplicity about this machine that impressed even her non-technical mind. When Leon sat down at the absurdly small control board, his hands seemed to do nothing except rest lightly upon it. Yet the walls were suddenly transparent, and there was Thalassa already shrinking below them. There had been no sense of movement, no whisper of sound, yet the island was dwindling even as she watched. The misty edge of the world, a great bow dividing the blue of the sea from the velvet blackness of space, was becoming more curved with every passing second. "Look," said Leon, pointing to the stars. The ship was already visible, and Laura felt a sudden sense of disappointment that it was so small. She could see a cluster of portholes around the center section, but there appeared to be no other breaks anywhere on the vessel's squat and angular hull. The illusion lasted only for a second. Then, with a shock of incredulity that made her senses reel and brought her to the edge of vertigo, she saw how hopelessly her eyes had been deceived. Those were not portholes. The ship was still miles away. What she was seeing were the gaping hatches through which the ferries could shuttle on their journeys between the starship and Thalassa. There is no sense of perspective in space, where all objects are still clear and sharp, whatever their distance. Even when the hull of the ship was looming up beside them, an endless curving wall of metal eclipsing the stars, there was still no real way of judging its size. She could only guess that it must be at least 2 miles in length. The ferry berthed itself, as far as Laura could judge, without any intervention from Leon. She followed him out of the little control room, and when the airlock opened, she was surprised to discover that they could step directly into one of the starship's passageways. They were standing in a long, tubular corridor that stretched in each direction as far as the eye could see. The floor was moving beneath their feet, carrying them along swiftly and effortlessly, yet strangely enough, Laura had felt no sudden jerk as she stepped onto the conveyor that was now sweeping her through the ship. One more mystery she would never explain. There would be many others before Leon had finished showing her the Magellan. It was an hour before they met another human being. In that time, they must have traveled miles, sometimes being carried along by the moving corridors, sometimes being lifted up long tubes within which gravity had been abolished. It was obvious what Leon was trying to do. He was attempting to give her some faint impression of the size and complexity of this artificial world that had been built to carry the seeds of a new civilization to the stars. The engine room alone, with its sleeping, shrouded monsters of metal and crystal, must have been half a mile in length. As they stood on the balcony high above that vast arena of latent power, Leon said proudly, and perhaps not altogether accurately, "These are mine." Laura looked down on the huge and meaningless shapes that had carried Leon to her across the light years, and did not know whether to bless them for what they had brought or to curse them for what they might soon take away. They sped swiftly through cavernous holds, packed with all the machines and instruments and stores needed to mold a virgin planet and to make it a fit home for humanity. There were miles upon miles of storage racks, holding on tape or microfilm or still more compact form the cultural heritage of mankind. Here they met a group of experts from Thalassa, looking rather dazed, trying to decide how much of all this wealth they could loot in the few hours left of them. Had her own ancestors, Laura wondered, been so well equipped when they crossed space? She doubted it. Their ship had been far smaller, and Earth must have learned much about the techniques of interstellar colonization in the centuries since Thalassa was opened up. When the Magellan's sleeping travelers reached their new home, their success was assured if their spirit matched their material resources. Now they had come to a great white door which slid silently open as they approached, to reveal of all incongruous things to find inside a spaceship, a cloakroom in which lines of heavy furs hung from pegs. Leon helped Laura to climb into one of these, then selected another for himself. She followed him uncomprehendingly as he walked toward a circle of frosted glass set in the floor. Then he turned to her and said, "There's no gravity where we're going now, so keep close to me and do exactly as I say." The crystal trap door swung upward like an opening watch glass, and out of the depth swirled a blast of cold such as Laura had never imagined, still less experienced. Thin wisps of moisture condensed in the freezing air, dancing around her like ghosts. She looked at Leon as if to say, "Surely you don't expect me to go down there." He took her arm reassuringly and said, "Don't worry. You won't notice the cold after a few minutes. I'll go first." The trapdoor swallowed him. Laura hesitated for a moment, then lowered herself after him. Lowered? No, that was the wrong word. Up and down no longer existed here. Gravity had been abolished. She was floating without weight in this frigid, snow-white universe. All around her were glittering honeycombs of glass, forming thousands and tens of thousands of hexagonal cells. They were laced together with clusters of pipes and bundles of wiring, and each cell was large enough to hold a human being. And each cell did. There they were, sleeping all around her, the thousands of colonists to whom Earth was still, in literal truth, a memory of yesterday. What were they dreaming, less than halfway through their 300-year sleep? Did the brain dream at all in this dim no-man's land between life and death? Narrow, endless belts, fitted with handholds every few feet, were strung across the face of the honeycomb. Leon grabbed one of these and let it tow them swiftly past the great mosaic of hexagons. Twice they changed direction, switching from one belt to another, until at last they must have been a full quarter of a mile from the point where they had started. Leon released his grip, and they drifted to rest beside one cell no different from all the myriads of others. But as Laura saw the expression on Leon's face, she knew why he had brought her here, and knew that her battle was already lost. The girl floating in her crystal coffin had a face that was not beautiful, but was full of character and intelligence. Even in this centuries-long repose, it showed determination and resourcefulness. It was the face of a pioneer, of a frontierswoman who could stand beside her mate and help him wield whatever fabulous tools of science might be needed to build a new Earth beyond the stars. For a long time, unconscious of the cold, Laura stared down at the sleeping rival who would never know of her existence. Had any love, she wondered, in the whole history of the world, ever ended in so strange a place? At last she spoke, her voice hushed, as if she feared to wake these slumbering legions. "Is she your wife?" Leon nodded. "I'm sorry, Laura. I never intended to hurt you." "It doesn't matter now. It was my fault, too." She paused and looked more closely at the sleeping woman. "And your child as well?" "Yes, it will be born 3 months after we land." How strange to think of a gestation that would last 9 months and 300 years. Yet it was all part of the same pattern, and that, she knew now, was a pattern that had no place for her. These patient multitudes would haunt her dreams for the rest of her life. As the crystal trapdoor closed behind her and warmth crept back into her body, she wished that the cold that had entered her heart could be so easily dispelled. One day, perhaps, it would be, but many days and many lonely nights must pass ere that time came.